Hi, everybody. I'm Maury Povich. On my podcast, On Par with Maury Povich, I'm going to sit down with the icons, the stars, and the faces at the very center of today's big cultural moments. With everyone from comedians Josh Johnson, Dan Soder, Leanne Morgan, to newsmakers Don Lemon, Joy Reid, Aaron Parnas, and so many more. So join me for new episodes every week, because nothing is off limits. Great conversations. They're always on par. Follow and listen to On Par with Maury Povich wherever you get your podcasts.
We've got our take cannons loaded and ready. Absolutely dominant on deep routes. Absolutely dominant on short routes.
Boys are back, baby.
Excellent separation against man coverage.
This is Reception, Reception, the show.
Yo, what's cracking, everybody? James Go, Matt Harmon here with you. You're listening to Reception, Perception, the show. All right. Oh, my goodness. Matt, I don't know how you do it, but year two wide receivers have hit the site. 10 profiles in total. 10. Do you sleep? Are you a zombie? Are you a vampire? How do you get this done? 10 in total? That's insane.
Oh, please. It's a piece of cake. Actually, the funny thing is, by Friday, we'll at least have 5 more on the site in addition to the guys that are on right now. I will say, just to pull the curtain back for you, James, and for the subscribers, this is actually, it's the easiest group to complete, because for the most part, outside of Isaac Tesla, everybody that I'm going to drop for this year two drop, I've already got 4 games in the bag. From the rookie report. We're just adding 4 more games to the additional 4. So it is kind of easy to chart those guys out. Yeah, the only difficult is, like, you know, you want to take your foot off the gas a little bit after the draft. But no time to do that. No time to do that. You got to get these year two. And I love the year two drop, by the way. I know based on the site metrics, the most popular stuff is definitely the prospect data and the prospect profiles. That being said, I find the year two stuff the most valuable for me, because regardless of, and obviously sometimes it is worth of, and it is still, like, I think for the first few years of their career, always useful to refer back to the prospect profiles and, like, who are these guys as prospects, you know, how does that kind of move and evolve and everything like that. But for the most part, what you see of these guys, even early on in their NFL careers, is more valuable than their 100% college reps. So that's why 100%. I really find a lot of value in the year two profiles. And it's a way to be early on some of these guys, whether that is from an optimistic or frankly a pessimistic standpoint. And I just, as a little disclaimer off the top.
Yeah.
I think this group of receivers is good. Maybe not great. You know,
I don't think there's a standout, right? But there's a lot of good players though.
Oh, a lot of good players. And, you know, even the 3 guys we're going to talk about today, which probably would be the consensus top 3 right now, because obviously Travis Hunter is a wild card, whether he's going to, you know, how much he's going to play offense, defense, the internet wars on that are ones that I'm not interested in fighting. But so beyond that, the 3 we're going to talk about today, probably the consensus top 3 guys right now in the class. And even these guys, like, good, certainly good players. I think there are some things we need to see in their games for them before they get into kind of like that superstar territory. And that's always like the expectations, which is sometimes a little bit too high.
Let me apologize to the internet and the football world. I drafted Travis Hunter in our dynasty league, Matt, number 2 overall last year. And so I blame myself.
Yeah, it's pretty much your fault for sure.
Yeah, pretty much my fault. For
whatever, dude. We don't have to talk about the Travis Hunter stuff, but it's funny. Like, the discourse is just, like, so nauseating, bro. So I don't know. That's why I actually kind of enjoyed going back to the film and, like, just checking in on him.
We're definitely going to talk about Travis Hunter on the next episode. But it is interesting. I just feel like there are certain players that the internet crosses their fingers for. Like, there is just hardcore wish casting. And I think Luther Burden is that guy that I want to get to in just here a little bit. But I want to start with Emeka Ogbuka. 63 receptions, 938 yards, 6 touchdowns. He had a subpar 49.6% catch rate. But I think if you look at the raw stats, Matt, you say to yourself, you know what? This guy had a pretty dang solid rookie season. Anytime you can come out the gates with over 900 receiving yards as a rookie with 6 touchdowns, that's really, really good stuff. It just happened to be that he came out gangbusters, and my goodness gracious, the last 8 games of his rookie season were just abysmal. I mean, I don't know what happened. Actually, I kind of have an idea of what happened. I think the injury really took its toll, but 45% catch rate the final 8 games of the season, 2.9 receptions, 32.6 yards, 0 touchdowns, 0 over his final 8 games. What do we make of Emeka Ogbuka?
Yeah, such an interesting rookie season, because I think if you do just kind of look at the final stats and like, and I do think that like if you're just box score, or if you're just like box score scouting and not individual game box scores, but like statistically, I think that it's probably right to just take the whole season product and be like, you know what? That's a promising rookie year. Obviously, over 900 yards, you mentioned it. I think that's probably the right thing, not to over-index on the dramatic, like, because the funny thing about this is that if we actually inversed it, right, and like he was slow to start his year and he finished that way, we'd be like, oh my God, this is the next, like, you know, superstar receiver, because typically how you finish does cloud, especially like for fantasy folks, it clouds a lot of the whole picture and everything like that. It really, really becomes a defining point of it. So I would say from the stats part of it, that is something I think just it's worth asking, like, who is the real Emeka Ogbuka? If you're looking at just how the production split, you mentioned it. He did not clear 45 receiving yards just once from week 11 on. And I say week 11 because that is when I publish the rookie report, middle of the season, put the rookie report out there, and his numbers were glowing in the rookie report. So that's all from that like first part of the season, the vast majority of it being before week 7, that rookie report charting. And again, that looks really good for Emeka Ogbuka in the rookie report, which is again a 4-game sample. 74.5% success rate versus man, nearly 83% against zone, and nearly 82% against press. Those are like, oh man, really great numbers. The full season sample, 71.4% against man, 79.3% against zone, and 68.4% against press. So the numbers go down all throughout that, which I think what that shows is that yes, Baker Mayfield was injured and not playing very well. That's a part of it. And I also think he did not play well in the back half of the year. And anybody watching could tell you that, whether that's because of injury or whatever, he didn't play well in the back half of the year. But I think this also shows you that Emeka Ogbuka in isolation did not play as well in the back half of the year as he did in the first half of the year. That is also part of the discussion here as well. I don't think you can get away from that. I don't think you can watch the Ogbuka that we saw in the first, certainly again, before that week 7 hamstring in week 6, he injures his hamstring against the San Francisco 49ers. He returns right back the next week and plays again. Right. I just thought he did not move as well after that. Going through the charting at the back half of the year, I just didn't move the same way at the beginning of the year. So I think that's a big part of it that we have to kind of analyze here and discuss. Of course, we'll also do more context stuff, but I think that's a big part of it that to me, coming away from it, I did think that the first half, second half splits certainly coincided with, yes, his quarterback not playing as well and maybe also being injured, but Emeka Ogbuka not playing as well in the back half of the year, also potentially because he played through a hamstring injury that I thought he'd miss multiple weeks for, and he came right back out and just didn't look like the same player throughout the rest of the season. So I still think that leads us to the question of like, who is the real Emeka Ogbuka?
I honestly think that if he were able to take a look back at his rookie season, I don't think he'd gut out this hamstring injury. Now, that being said, I'd be interested to see, Matt, too, like, what was the Tampa Bay pressure on the rookie, on the young man to get out there and even be a decoy, right? Because, again, Mike Evans is hurt. Sure. Like, they had a lot of injuries at the wide receiver position. And Emeka Buka came out gangbusters. Maybe they're like, hey, man, can you just, you know, maybe run a few routes for us here and there? That being said, Mike Evans moves on. It's Chris Godwin. It's Emeka Buka. Jalen McMillan is in the mix, and they drafted Ted Hurst as well. They've got Tez Johnson in that room too. So it's a room that I think lacks a clear cut number one. Like, I like Chris Godwin. He's getting a little bit older, and the role that he plays on this team is really good and enticing. It's not your stereotypical number one. Let me just put it that way.
Yeah.
So I do think that Emeka Buka will be asked to play a big time role on this Tampa Bay passing attack.
Yeah, and he kind of was last year too. And, you know, I really wonder what the receiving core would have looked like if everybody had been healthy all of last year, right? Yeah. Especially had Mike Evans been healthy all of last year, because you can also kind of argue that Buka had some of his best games, not all, but some of his best games from a reception perception standpoint at the beginning of the year before Mike Evans, I believe, got hurt a week three. So there was definitely something. I mean, his monster game against the Seahawks and Emeka Buka, that was before, that was while Mike Evans was hurt. So it wasn't just purely that, but at the same time, that's, I think, a factor here too, because, and this matters as we're talking about the construction of the current Buccaneers receiver room. Mm-hmm. Again, I think same thing I said with the overall stats results, that if you look at Abuka's like full season RP results, I mentioned 71% against man, 79% against zone, 68% against press. You're like, that's a pretty good solid rookie season. Totally. Nothing wrong with that. Pretty solid. Now, does it scream like, hey, I'm ready to be like the big boy alpha wide receiver in the room? Maybe not. And again, I think that's where you kind of come back to the profile for Emeka Buka. Remember, like, I gave him a clear round one grade, tier two designation in the stacked rankings. That being said, he did profile pretty clearly, at least to me, as somebody that didn't need to be slot only. Like, he definitely had indicators in his game that he could play on the perimeter.
Yeah.
But he was probably more of like a power slot prospect, right? He took 74% sample snaps inside as a collegiate player in his prospect profile, 81% off the line of scrimmage. And he was a much better zone beater than man beater, 82nd percentile against zone, 42nd against man, limited looks against press. But when he did, he was really good against press coverage. So I thought, like, okay, he's probably a guy that, again, doesn't need to be slot only, but slot mostly, yeah, and kind of in that bigger slot mold. But that's not what he played as a rookie. He was mostly outside, 68.6%, and he was on the line of scrimmage for 64%. Like, he played a lot of outside X receiver last year because Mike Evans was hurt. And you mentioned the other guys in the room. Remember, even Jalen McMillan wasn't healthy during this stretch. It's Chris Godwin coming off of a major injury, who's had his best years when he's been a slot receiver. Sterling Shepard, Tez Johnson, and these guys, like, they're all interior. I mean, Tez Johnson, we made a bunch of jokes during the season about, like, how much of Tez Johnson's weight can you rep on the bench press in the sicko stream, right? Like, that's how light Tez Johnson is. Right, so right. Buka kind of had to become their ex. I don't know if that's his best position long term. I would like to see him more off ball as a Z, kick into the slot, kind of working interchangeably with Chris Godwin. But unless Ted Hurst out of Georgia State, third round pick, is ready to rock from day one, like, they don't really have another X receiver option on the roster right now.
It almost seems as if they might just try to fill that X in the aggregate. I think Chris Godwin will be asked to play a little bit of X. Emeka Buka and Ted Hurst, as you mentioned, play some X, and I think Tez will be some sacrificial reps in there too. You know, like, you need a guy to clear out some space out there. Yeah, let's get Tez out there. You know what I mean?
I think McMillan would be, and look, McMillan's a tough guy to read right now because he just didn't play very much last year, but when he got on the field, he actually did play pretty well towards the end of the season. And he's probably their best deep receiver right now. Or at least, like, that's where he's best, is as a deep guy. So I think he could be that player that's a little bit sacrificial as well. And I think he probably just fits more of an on-ball receiver standpoint than Tez Johnson does, because at least he's not 140-something pounds like Tez Johnson is, or 150-something pounds like Tez Johnson is. So, you know, there's definitely more there. I would also note, too, that they hired Zach Robinson, former Atlanta Falcons offensive coordinator, to replace Josh Grizzard, who they let go of, who used to be the passing game coordinator for this team under Liam Cohen, the offensive coordinator in 2024. Obviously, Zach Robinson was in Los Angeles with Liam Cohen for that 2022 season. And he they're going to probably share a lot of the same DNA offensively, some of the same language and stuff. But one thing that Robinson, who wasn't perfect in Atlanta, but I think was probably a little over criticized, one thing he did pretty well in 2024 was get everybody reps from the slot. If you go back and look in that 2024 season with the Atlanta Falcons, like everybody was getting work from the slot. Drake London, 37% of his routes from the slot. Darnell Mooney, 42%. Ray McLeod, 47%. Kyle Pitts, 39%. I mean, all those guys are 35% or more of their snaps, of their routes run from the slot. And they did a lot of that with like motion and getting guys going pre-snap. So condensing things as well. I think that won't be as big of a problem if Robinson's able to bring that here. But still, I would imagine that Ibuka is going to play the most snaps outside and on the ball. Again, unless third round rookie Ted Hurst out of Georgia State, who I like, but he's a third round rookie out of Georgia State, unless he's ready to rock from day one and be the X receiver. That is why I did like that pick for the Bucks, because I think they do kind of lack for like a big boy perimeter guy right now. And I think long-term Ibuka's best position would be, you know, essentially the role that Chris Godwin currently plays for this team.
Yeah. When you take a look at the route by route basis, it's an all green inside route tree for Emeka Ibuka. So the post, dig, curl, slant, all green, over 80% on all four of those routes. And so, you know, there is a lot to like, especially in today's game, when we're talking about guys that can play outside and break inside. This is kind of the strong suit of Emeka Ibuka. And again, keep in mind, this is, you know, him playing through an injury and having a very up and down rookie campaign, still over 80% on the post, dig, curl, and slant. I think that is, again, very encouraging when you're taking a look at Emeka Ibuka. Another rookie, Teteroa McMillan, last year, 122 targets, 70 receptions, 1,014 yards, and 7 touchdowns, a 57.4% catch rate. Teteroa McMillan, you talk about playing big boy football. This guy was playing X and playing a lot of X receiver for the Carolina Panthers. Where does he fit in the pantheon of X receivers? What did you see, Matt Harmon?
Yeah, I mean, really good results from year one, obviously, playing as that X receiver. So impressive, right? You think about these guys who like need role catering, this, that, and the other. For Teteroa McMillan to come out and take 82.4% of his sample snaps outside and 81% on the line of scrimmage,
wow,
that is about as big boy X receiver as it gets for a rookie. Now, I think that, you know, I say this a lot, like if you are playing your guy, your number one guy, which right now Teteroa McMillan is certainly their number one guy, you're playing him 80% outside and on the line of scrimmage, those two in combination, that's actually not good. You don't want to be using your number one like that. You want to be moving this guy around the formation. And I do think that Carolina knows that. Dave Canales talked about that down the stretch. Remember, he had that massive game against the Atlanta Falcons, I believe in week 11 was Teteroa McMillan. And part of that was he was moving into the slot a little bit more. And, you know, of course, because we got to always criticize everything. The first response was, why didn't you do that sooner? Why didn't you do that sooner? I'm like, yo, look at some of the receivers they were running out at the beginning of the year, because Jalen Coker was not healthy. We're talking about like Hunter Renfro. Yeah. Guess what? Hunter Renfro can only, especially coming back from being retired, medically retired for a year.
For over a year, man. It was crazy.
Yeah. Like, he can only play in the slot. He could only play in the slot when he was in his best, you know, shape. Obviously, at this point, that's a guy that has to play in the slot. That's why Coker being healthier in the back half of the year was so valuable for Teteroa, because it allowed him to get some reps from the inside off the line of scrimmage. And again, very similar to the conversation we had with Emeka Ibuka when they take Ted Hurst in the third round. I think this team taking Chris Brazel in the third round also sends me another signal potentially about what they might do you know, with Tetteroe McMillan moving around a little bit more. And I know for a fact that Tetteroe wants to move around a little bit more. I talked to him for at the Super Bowl this past year, and he's bringing up like, look at what the Rams do. Look at what Jackson Smith and Jigba does, you know, like moving all around, getting routes from the backfield, you know, he's like, you got to put your number one guy in a position to make plays. And part of that is moving him around. So while it was impressive that he does this, you know, outside on ball for over 80% of his snaps in the first season of his NFL career. And oh, by the way, turned in really positive results against press man coverage while doing that. Very impressive. Don't think it has to be this way going forward for him. I think we can, I think we can move him around a little bit, but when we're looking at this, and again, to go into the success rates here, 72.3 against man, 72nd percentile, just under 73% against press, 70th percentile.
Yeah, it's good.
That's great. That's great for a rookie receiver playing that much X. There are holes in his game. We'll talk about some of those holes that do need to get better.
Sure.
But, I mean, we're just talking about, like, the pantheon of X receivers. And, again, that, like, pure X bucket. I don't think he has to belong to that, like, T. Higgins pure X bucket. I think he's much more – you know, of the family of receivers like the Drake Londons, I think London is better. I did like London better as a prospect. I think London showed a little bit more early in his career, but we'll see what happens. You know, Michael Pittman is another player that's like a comparison to this, where they don't have to just play X receiver, but there are these big guys who separate better than you think. Michael Thomas, Keenan Allen, some of these same type of players that are just big receivers that run good routes, don't have to just play X.
When you take a look at his best route, it was by far his dig route. 91.5% success rate on the dig. Matt Harmon, this is absolutely bananas. I actually didn't look it up historically. It's got to be up there, though. 17.5% route participation. This was his most run route, and it was by far his most successful route as well. Very impressive number there when we're talking about an inside in-breaking dig.
Yeah, Tetteroe McMillan, you mentioned 91.5% success rate on the dig routes. I did look it up in the historical database. That is the sixth best success rate on dig routes I currently have in the full RP database. So
As a rookie,
amazing. Playing big boy X receiver, pretty impressive stuff there for our guy Tetteroe McMillan. And by the way, this is another thing from our conversation at the Super Bowl. I asked him, you know, as I often do with these guys, I like to ask him, what's your favorite route to run? He sat there and thought about it. He said, I like to run dig routes. So I was like, well, good news, pal. That's your best route, buddy.
Good news, buddy.
And at that point, I actually only had the rookie report data because this full profile wasn't done. Yeah. The number is actually better than it was in the rookie report by the end of the season. And I think some of that was because they started moving him around a little bit more. And yeah, he showed a lot of ability, and this was true in his prospect profile too. This was the strength of his prospect route chart, was the dig routes and some of those bigger in-breakers. You know, that was obviously a big part of what made him such an appealing, a guy that went in the top 10, a guy that I had as a tier 2 receiver prospect, a really high ranking player, was that ability to, you know, sink your hips and cleanly separate. I mean, people talk about this guy that doesn't separate, and he's running dig routes at almost 92% success rate. Come on, give me a break. Yeah, right. He clearly wins there. The other guys that are above him in terms of the historical database, Mike Evans, Brandon Ayuk, Devontae 2023 Brandon Ayuk, of course, Devontae Smith, Deontay Johnson, shout out, AJ Brown. Like that's it. Those are the guys we're talking about there in terms of who's better than him on these dig routes. So, yeah, the strength of his game. He knows it's the strength of his game. Let's keep running those dig routes for Tetteroe McMillan. That was pretty cool for him to say that. So, yeah. Also, by the way, not just the dig route, which was super impressive. 91.7% success rate on comebacks. This was something insane. I know for a fact I talked about in his prospect profile where he was, and again, this is crazy for a guy that is 6'4", every bit of like 6'4" and 210 plus pounds. I believe he said he's actually going to be bigger going into this season.
Lord.
Yeah, so we'll see about that when we come back to one other point that he does need to improve on. But yeah, for his ability to sink his hips against man coverage and work on those comebacks is just super impressive. for somebody of his size. So yeah, I mean, to be pushing over 90% on two, what I would definitely consider to be big boy routes, really impressive for McMillan.
I also felt like when you take a look at his route participation, right, like so much of it is, okay, 17.5% dig, 14.2% curl route, 15.3% slant. These are all in-breakers, right? And to me, it felt like Dave Canales was trying to work around his quarterback. Right. Like Bryce Young doesn't have that drive to get that ball out there from sideline to sideline. Right. So when you look at a 4.5% comeback rate for Tetteron McMillan, despite the fact that he's just crushing everyone out there, to me, that indicates less about the coaching staff and more about the quarterback that they have there and them trying to protect Bryce Young just a little bit.
Sure. And he, obviously Bryce Young's a tough variable here. You know, he's definitely had some moments as Bryce Young, but just statistically, the product has not been good. Like, it's not been good for Bryce Young, you know? And he's in no way has he been really like been an above average starting quarterback. I don't think you can make the case. Like, there has been little moments, even in this past season, like that Falcons game I mentioned and by the way, the Falcons at times have been a, you know, Garbo defense. Last year, they were a really hard defense to play against, a really good unit. That was one of Bryce Young's best games. He was ripping it in that one, you know, but then didn't really continue that momentum throughout the course of his. So like, he has had games, he's had moments, but he hasn't strung it all together yet. Yeah. I think what's interesting too, and again, this comes back to the Brazel selection. I think I might have mentioned this to you when they took Brazel, and like, what are they kind of building here in Carolina, other than one of the biggest wide receiver rooms you've maybe ever seen?
It's straight basketball team out there, man. It's crazy.
Yeah, even Coker, who's listed like 6'3", something. He's like 6'1", but over 210 pounds. Like, he's a big receiver in his own right, kind of a bigger slot, which is, of course, why I really like him. But if you just look at the receiver room, it's these massive guys. I also think it's going to be one of those rooms where they can really spread this thing out. Mm-hmm. And that, I think, is really interesting with Bryce Young. In 2024, Bryce Young averaged 11.2 yards per completion, 7.3 adjusted yards per attempt, with a 0.11 EPA per dropback. Really solid numbers for Bryce Young, specifically out of empty. All of those numbers were out of empty. So when it's full, just spread the field. And he had 96 attempts out of empty in 2024, 88 last year, which, remember, Bryce Young was benched in 2024. He didn't play the full season. Right. So he had more attempts out of empty than he did in 25 when he didn't play, he played a full season in 25. He didn't play in 24. So just to show that they kind of went away from it a little bit there, 7.7 yards per attempt in 24. 5.6 last year, passer ratings down, everything's down. I think, again, part of that was the options they had to spread the field last year, not very good. We haven't mentioned the name Xavier Leggett yet, but he's a guy that he needs role catering, right? Like, he flopped in the X receiver position in 2024 as a rookie when they moved him there after Deontay Johnson was traded. Like, he can't play X receiver despite the size. Like, he needs to be off ball and kind of movement route guy. You know, and Brazel, I think, might push him to be the third receiver there, you know. And I think, but that's where it's important to get all these guys out on the route, because Coker is a guy who can play outside but is a big slot. Leggett needs role catering. You want to get Tetteron McMillan inside. You need kind of, Dave Canales, who's a former receiver coach himself, talked about Brazel as like, yeah, his best thing, he's going to stretch the field and open things up for other guys. Like, he's literally talking about him as a sacrificial type player in a way. Yeah. I mean, he'll obviously add value in his own right, but I think Bryce Young being able to spread the field with these guys, like, that's probably the best path to get whatever there is to get out of Bryce Young. 9.5 air yards per attempt out of empty in 2024. Like, spread the field and push it on these digs and in-breakers to all of these guys who run those routes really well. I think they can almost be the team that goes away from the trend right now, which is like heavy personnel packages, multiple tight ends, all that. I think this team might have like the highest 3+ receiver on the field usage, which will be interesting for McMillan. How much is he able to dominate targets in that regard? Because again, there are some ways he needs to get better.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that Brazel selection really had me like my gears turning about some of what they might do with Bryce Young from a spread quarterback standpoint and how that will, I think, from an alignment standpoint, suit Tetero McMillan's game.
It is very interesting because a 91.5% success rate on the dig, you would think, okay, well, he must be great on all these in-breaking routes. Not the case. And again, if we're talking about areas where Tetero McMillan needs to improve, it's interesting. Let me just lay it out for the listeners out there. If you are an X receiver, you got to have some kind of skill getting long. Right, mm-hmm. Where he had a 54% success rate on the nine. That's slightly below average. Honestly, he's knocking on the door of being average, but still not a strength for Tetero McMillan. And then you'd like to have some kind of combination of like a slant route and either the curl or comeback or dig, right? So something in that intermediate area, he's got that with the dig and the out, right? Like he's fine and the comeback. But 70.1% success rate on the slant. Again, when you're talking about X receiver, you want that short. What's that short area that you want to dominate? It's got to be the slant. You're threatening vertical. You take one cut inside and you go run that slant route. 70. Well, let's give him 71. 71% success rate on the slant, Matt, it's below what you would want. And again, I think the benchmark for a good slant route is 80%. You know, we can mess around 76, 77% if you do other things really well. But 71%, clearly an area of need, I think, for Tetero McMillan. He's got to get open short.
Yeah, and I think there's like two different issues here, really, to me, in my opinion. One, I think for some of the slant route stuff, he needs to be a little bit more like decisive at the break points in the quick game, specifically against zone coverage, like finding those windows and just kind of settling into it, I think is something he can get better at. I mentioned the good numbers against man press. And this is just generally true of like non-elite X receivers, is they're going to be better against press man than they are against zone. You just think about some of the coverages you can crack from the perimeter. So he's below 78% against zone coverage, 40th percentile, not terrible. And like I said, some of these non-elite X receivers, you're going to finish in that bucket for most of your career, but that is one area where I think he probably does need to get better, is kind of working that quick game against zone coverage. So that's represented in the slant route. Now for the dig and post, or excuse me, the post and the nine route, which are below average, that I do think specifically the nine route just might be like a part of his game. I don't want to say forever, but unless he takes big, big leaps, it just might be part of his game. Like this was part of his game as a prospect, like where he didn't separate consistently is on like just the pure vertical go routes. Now, obviously, you can be a big playmaker and make big plays without winning on the nine route. Okay. Like, this guy's going to make a ton of big plays with that freaking dig route success rate we talk about. Like he's going to make, especially because he can run after the catch a little bit. He's a little bit better with the ball in his hands than you think. He's going to make big plays just on that. Okay. Like that's not something I'm too concerned about, but that nine route success rate, I do think is going to be something that probably haunts him a little bit just because he doesn't have that final gear, right, to really pull away deep, like the true elite straight line speed, I don't think is a part of his game. Now, where you can offset that is being an elite contested catch receiver or a great contested catch receiver. And that is where I think McMillan left me a little bit wanting as a rookie in compared to a guy like Drake London, who I think Drake London, like you ask Drake London to dunk on somebody in the tight coverage. And I'm only comparing these guys because they're off compared players.
Yeah.
I think you ask Drake London to dunk on someone in contested catch situations, even if he doesn't cleanly separate all the time down the field from an explosive speed standpoint, he can do that. He's a ball winner. He's a bucket getter in that way. McMillan, just under 18% contested target rate, and he caught 66.7% of them. Not terrible by any means, but not quite in that like upper echelon when we're talking about reception perception charting. He dropped 7.4% of his sample targets. Like he left some plays on the field at the catch point that you want him to get better at, that you want him to take that next step in his second season, which by the way, he can. I'm confident in that based on the player that I watched. in college. Like I think he can get back to that. And we know that drops and contested catch rate are not the stickiest stats year to year. But I just think he needs to kind of work on being like a finisher, tightening up the details when like tracking the ball into his hands in tight coverage. Like I said, not overly concerning, but that's the way that you can offset like the lack of what I think might always be a little bit of lack of separation down the field on the go routes.
That being said, there's got to be an improvement in the slant route area. I mean, if we can get to like 75%, 76, 77%, then we're really cooking with gas, right? Because he just, and you know why I'm hyper fixated on this too, Matt, is because man, in this offense, he gets, you talking about roll catering? It's the exact opposite. I mean, he gets no layup looks.
Yeah.
0.4% route participation on the screens. What? 4.1%. That's one. We're talking about a 4.1 route participation on flat route. Like it's just so less than 5% of his routes come onto the flat in the screen. That's mind-boggling for a player who is truly your number one wide receiver. Now, to put that in perspective, like somebody like Emeka Abuka, right? Like we just talked about Emeka Abuka, 3% screen, 4.7% flat. So now we're like 7-8%, right? Like Luther Burden, who we're going to be talking about soon, double digits, right? So Teteroa McMillan having less than 5% of his routes come on the flattened screen, which again, these are generated to get you the football. I think that's just, again, if you want to get the ball short and quick, you got to improve on that slant.
Yeah. And again, I'm going to do it one more time, but like Drake London in 2024, you know, he was a guy that was a 10.6% slant route rate. So not a lot. Flat routes, 2.7%. But like slant route success rate, 85.7%. You know, think about a guy like Michael Thomas, who, as I mentioned, is probably, if we're talking about like this family of wide receivers, you know, I think Michael Thomas might be like the top peak version. If not, then like Drake London is right there. Then I think it's a step down to the McMillans and then maybe like a step down to, you know, the Michael Pittmans, kind of like those type of guys. And then, you know, Denzel Boston from this past year's class, I think, is in this family of wide receivers. I think Jaden Higgins, another year two receiver, is like the lower end range of this wide receivers.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, like you think about the two guys that at the top of that archetype I'm talking about here, Drake London and Michael Pittman, I mean, Michael Thomas, those guys just hit you on inbreakers, quick inbreakers over and over and over again. Now, in fairness to Teteroa McMillan, this Drake London 2024 season that I'm quoting here was the first year where he was not used as an 80% on ball outside receiver as he was Drake London in the first 2 years of his career in Arthur Smith's offense when he was still good on these routes. Don't get me wrong, but like obviously that was a little bit of roll catering. That's what I'm talking about. Like Drake London is not, and not, by the way, neither was Michael Thomas. People still remember Michael Thomas as like, oh, he was this big slot receiver in the New Orleans Saints offense under Sean Payton. He was not. He played a ton of outside on the line of scrimmage player. He just ran a bunch of short routes because by the time he was in his prime, Drew Brees couldn't push the football down the field.
Right.
So like everybody remembers him as the slant boy moniker. A lot of that was not because of Michael Thomas's limitations. It was actually because like Drew Brees was, his arm was falling off at that point. Still a good quarterback because he's better than everybody else up here. But you know, this was starting to fall off at that point. Anyway, so again, like that role catering a little bit just from a formation standpoint, just even a touch like Drake London, I mentioned earlier in the Abuka profile, this 2024 season, he's in the slot between, you know, depending on what you're looking at, you know, the routes versus the snaps, 37 to 39%. That's all we're talking about here. We're talking about going from 17% or whatever it is for Teteroa to maybe somewhere around 35 to 37%. And I think, again, to come back to the Chris Brazel point, that's where I did think that pick was interesting because could you have like two sacrificial guys on the outside in Leggett and Brazel and then have, you know, Coker and McMillan operating on the interior in these empty sets? I think it's possible. By the way, if you're going true empty, you're going to have like three slot options at that point, three guys that are not lined up on the boundary. So
yeah,
there's ways that McMillan, I 100%, I said in the profile, say it again, he does need to get better in the quick game. He does need to get better. But I also think from a role catering standpoint, there's something to be done there as well.
Well, if we're talking about quick game, Luther Burden is certainly one of those guys that are that's very exciting, I think, in the quick game. This is a player that in his first seven games did nothing. And as a matter of fact, in his first seven games, Matt, I've said this stat before, and I really just can't believe it. But in his first seven games, he had three different games where he had negative receiving yards. That is incredible. That being said, in his final eight games, he started to come alive. 5.6 targets, 4.3 receptions, 60.1 yards. Now, he only had one touchdown in that time span as well, but a really impressive 75% catch rate during those final eight games. If you stretch that out, he was on pace for 1,022 yards over those final eight. Now, let me ask you this, Matt. I think more casual fans have absolutely no idea who the hell Luther Burden is. Like none, right? Like I said, he only caught one touchdown, and casual fans, they see a lot of touchdowns for red zone and highlights and all that kind of stuff, right? Okay. But there are an inordinate amount of folks who cover football professionally that seemingly cannot stop talking about Luther Burden. Like, they love the prospect of Luther Burden going into 2026. Where do you fall in terms of what Luther Burden might look like in 2026?
Yeah, well, number one, there's a lot of reasons why people would like Luther Burden, one of which is because he's a really exciting player and, frankly, easy player to like with the ball in his hands. I mean, he is dynamic after the catch. Roma Dunze, his teammate, told me that they say in the building, like, whenever Luther Burden catches a football in space, I guess like a punt return is about to happen, because that is how dynamic he is. You know, with that football in his hands, his reception perception charting data backs that up as well. Like, this is a guy that easily, I mean, these type of players are very easy to like, because what they do is easy to see, right? Like, these refined route runners and technicians, people watching games on Sunday don't get a real good glimpse of that, but you do get a glimpse of like, oh, that guy caught a screen pass or a quick in breaker and got you 10 plus. Yeah, exactly. Or got you 10 plus yards. Sure. In addition to it, broke tackles, is really hard to bring down. He's slippery. Like, all that is very easy to like. That's part of it. The other part of it is, we don't have to give you the stats specifically, because every other podcast that talks about Luther Burden is going to mention that his like yards per route run as a rookie is one of the best ever for any rookies. Okay. It's like right behind Odell Beckham among rookie receivers. So yards per route run, people like that stat. It's a good stat. It's also worth noting the other guys that he's up top there with. It's all going to be some of the best receivers you've seen of late, like Odell Beckham, AJ Brown, Justin Jefferson is up there. These rookie yards per hour. Luther Burden was a part-time player doing that. These other guys were full-time players. So that's obviously context worth noting, even though, again, he is definitely a really, really good player. And I'm not taking away from him when I say that. The other thing is that he quite literally won people their fantasy football championships. His best game from yourself included, by me included, by the way, I won a fantasy football championship with Luther Burden on my roster in week 17. And people remember that, right? Like, because what we talked about, like, people remember the end of the season at a really high rate. It's the most recent thing you have seen. And Luther Burden in week 17 against the San Francisco 49ers caught 8 of his 9 targets for 138 yards and one of his 2 touchdowns on the season. Did Luther Burden there. Now, what people don't often talk about is that he was not good in the postseason, whatsoever. Like, all that yards per route run stuff, they usually cut it off there. They cut it off at week 18. Don't mention that he 14 targets, 42 yards in one game, 24 in the other. Yeah. Had a miscommunication on a route with Caleb Williams, a drop in another. So definitely, like, that was part of it too, that I wouldn't say he just like soared at the end of the year. There's that context as well. So that's why people like Luther Burden, because, quite frankly, from a stats perspective, from an eye test perspective, he is a really easy player to like, and his reception perception profile is really good as well, which you can talk about.
Yeah, I mean, listen, when we're talking about these thresholds, he clearly crossed those thresholds, right? Like 71% success rate versus man, 80% success rate versus zone. Again, as a freaking rookie, anytime you cross those thresholds, there is a lot to like. Okay, now, Matt, I guess I fall kind of sort of like on the lower range of this excitement. Okay. I think he's a good player. I don't see him as a great player. And I'll explain, like, because again, like, you take a look at the success rates and you're thinking to yourself, wow, this is really good. Yards per route run. Oh my gosh. Really, really good. Luther Burden. It's just too much of this. Like we're generating touches for this guy, you know? And it's like, I don't see enough like real receiver stuff. And like, I don't know, maybe I'm just like too spoiled with the whole like reception stuff. But I don't see enough like real receiver stuff to be like, oh my God, I'm going all in on Luther Burden. Like, this isn't that guy to me. I think he is a player who's a good player, but again, I just don't see enough refinement and ability to get open in multiple areas of the field where I'm going to say to myself, yeah, I'm going to invest in that guy.
I think that there's some truth to that. I wouldn't say full truth to that in terms of the Luther Burden kind of real receiver-ness. I mean, I would say that anyone who's over 70% success rate versus man, which he is at 71.1%, like, that's real enough for me, especially with some of the routes that he is good on. You know, dig route success rate is almost 85%. Really awesome. Like, he's so good in the intermediate area. And this was true of him as a prospect too, by the way, particularly like how he works out breaking routes against man coverage, which was true at Missouri. And was true in the NFL, 73% success rate on out routes. So he was really good on those like bigger outbreaking routes, specifically against man coverage. And he worked the middle of the field, I thought, well, in the intermediate area. Now, there are definitely areas where he needs to get better. He is certainly not like a fully formed superstar right now. Like, we didn't see that guy as a rookie. Now, in fairness to him, he missed a lot of time in the offseason with an injury. That was part of the reason why he started slow. This is also a guy that needed to be pushed. And we talked about this when he got drafted by the Bears, that, you know, had he gone to a different place, I might have been concerned about Luther Burden and some of the like less than savory moments on the field on film at Missouri from like an effort standpoint, specifically working against zone coverage where he would just kind of like run into leverage and then to stop, like he wouldn't consistently work himself open, that it was never going to fly in Chicago. So what was either going to happen was he was going to bust out right away. Like, it was, he's okay, fine, we're done with you, that's it. Or Ben Johnson, Antoine Rendell, and these guys are going to push this player and he's going to become a much better zone beater than he was in college. And I think at 80.4%, We got a pretty good result there for him in terms of the ability to beat zone coverage and kind of, especially, like I said, deep over the middle of the field, dig routes and stuff like that. So I thought it was a good rookie season for Luther Burden. Like, the hype and all that stuff, I'll let other people have those conversations. I just think from an on-field perspective, I would call this a good rookie season for Luther Burden. Obviously, we can talk about how he fits into the receiving room without DJ Moore. That's another part of this too, is that like what he was as a rookie, I don't think that's the role that they kind of really like him being a part-time player, more of a created touch guy. They're going to want to put the football in his hands and create touches for him. But he's going to take on a bigger, you know, no pun intended, burden in the passing game because now like DJ Moore. So is all these guys, by the way. Like, they went from a room in Chicago that looked kind of crowded last year to now like their third receivers are either Khalif Raymond or Xavier Thomas behind Adunze and Burden. Like, those guys are not, they're hopefully efficient players when you target them, but they're not volume hogs. So I think it's pretty much like Colson Loveland, Luther Burden, Rome Adunze. You can put the order however you want it, guys. Those guys are going to dominate targets.
All right. So again, you take a look at the wide receiver room. Obviously, they get rid of DJ Moore. This is now thrusting Luther Burden into more of a starting role opposite of Rome Odunze, who, oh my gosh, I can't wait for that profile to come out because, my goodness gracious, Rome Odunze has been so up and down with the injuries as well. They add a guy out of LSU and Xavier Thomas, who I think is a really interesting player. Okay, so Matt, walk me through this here a little bit in regards to Luther Burden. I'd like to see more. It's because nearly 40% of his routes were either the slant, flat, or screen, right? Yeah. So this is a lot of stuff near the line of scrimmage. That being said, as you pointed out, 85%, nearly 85% success rate on the dig, 73% success rate on the out. He's dominating, crushing the intermediate area of the field as well. And my goodness gracious, you want to talk about like getting in the good graces of Ben Johnson? That's it right there. You got to win on some of these intermediate routes. And certainly that is what Luther Burden is doing. But my question to you, though, is, okay, so DJ Moore moves on. Luther Burden, to me, right now is positioned to be the number two. Can he be a legitimate high-end number two for Chicago? And I tell you what, a lot of folks are looking at Romo Dunze and saying, well, you know what? I think Romo Dunze might have to slide down. Can Luther Burden be a true number one for Chicago in this wide receiver room?
You know, I definitely think that's possible. I think it, you know, is close to like should, and I don't think it's viewed this way because of how Burden ended the regular season and Odunze ended the regular season. I think that the conventional wisdom is like, oh yeah, Burden will clearly be the one and over Odunze. Right. I don't buy that. I think that people don't realize how devastating the injury was for Odunze last year, not just from a physical standpoint, but also from like a practice rep standpoint and like just falling out of like communication within the offense and things of that nature. But like the breakout that happened at the beginning of the season, I think was real for Odunze.
Same.
But that doesn't mean that, again, it has to be like one of the, I like both of these players. I think it's close to probably closer to a toss up as to who is better. The other thing I think is worth kind of pushing back on is I often see it framed as like, well, Luther Burden will be the slot guy and Odunze will be the X. I don't think so. Like, I think both of these guys are going to play all over the formation. Like, one thing that's clear after watching this offense, and like Detroit is Detroit. Okay. I'm talking about Chicago is Chicago, right? Like what Ben Johnson did his first season on the job at the control, like fully the buck stops with him. These guys, everybody played all different roles. Like there was no Amon-Ra St. Brown role, which like, oh, Luther Burden's gonna be that. Like a lot of the Amon-Ra St. Brown stuff, Odunze was doing at the beginning of the year, you know? Like, mm-hmm. I think that these two guys will play all three receiver positions a ton. And like everybody's going to get reps from the slot. There's not going to be like an X and a volume hog slot. So I think the good thing for both these guys, I think they can hang on the outside and play on the inside. Like, I think Burden is probably better on the quicker layup routes right now, and he got a lot more usage there. But I definitely think that from a route separation standpoint, winning at all three levels, like Odunze is a little bit ahead there than Burden is. But yeah, I think no questions in my mind that this guy is ready to be a starting receiver in the NFL and at least be a high quality too. And like, if he gets better from a technician standpoint and stuff like that, you know, does take on more big boy receiver stuff, even more in year two for Luther Burden. Like, yeah, he could be a one. I don't know that I've seen like enough to say let's go ahead and just, you know, moonwalk him in here, just wave him right on into that club. But I don't think that's true really of any of these rookie receivers this year. So yeah, I think that no question in my mind that he's ready to be a starting receiver. And I'm very optimistic about what he's going to do this year. I think Burden's profile was good. You know, is it great? I think it was definitely very, very, very good. And especially again, with the ball in his hands, like he is the most dynamic player, on that offense right now with the ball in his hands. And one of the most dynamic of this class. He was in space on nearly 68% of his sampled catches, went down on first contact on just 38% of those plays. That is a crazy low number.
Wow.
Multiple tackles on nearly 24. Like anything north of 20% in terms of breaking multiple tackles is an exceptional result, especially for a guy that's seeing this much volume of catches in the open field. So yeah, that right there is an advantage and like maybe even a trump card in his favor that we can spit this thing out and he can just go create plays on his own. And he just needs to get better, I think, like winning on his own to even get more of those results.
Yeah, you talked about that that dig route success rate. I mean, we've seen it in the NFL now, right? Like, especially in Sean McVay's offense, but in a lot of offenses across the NFL, guys who win there and are special after the catch.
Yeah.
Okay. We're cooking.
Those are great receivers. Those are great receivers. I mean, can he be someone that becomes like a tier one receiver in the NFL? Yeah, I wouldn't rule it out just because of guys that have done this from a catch, you know, post catch standpoint, but also can win on their own. And to me, like maybe you disagree a little bit, but I think to me, I saw enough to say like he can be a guy that definitely wins on his own. Now, like I said, some of those players from like a yards per route run standpoint, the efficiency stuff, they were better than Luther Burden in their rookie years, whether it was AJ Brown, whether it was Justin Jefferson, whether it was Puka Nacua and all the, you know, Odell Beckham Jr. certainly.
Right.
But like that doesn't, we don't have to push back on that so hard to then push him down too far, I guess, if that makes sense.
You know what it is, Matt? I've gotten caught up in the internet war of you have to pick between Odunze or Luther Burden. I am fully admitting I got caught up. I'm getting caught up in this war.
No, don't do it. recuse yourself from that bullshit, James.
Okay.
Like
okay, okay.
Literally,
I'm going to take a step back.
You are allowed to like two receivers on okay. one team.
That's fair.
I love Odunze. I'm a big Odunze guy. I was a big fan as a prospect. I'm a big fan of what he showed this past season, and I fully believe that year three can be a monster year for Rome Odunze. That does not mean I have to dislike Luther Burden.
Fair.
We don't have to do this shit, especially when it's concentrated. Especially when it's not like, oh boy, look, this team's going to throw the football. They're going to be efficient throwing the football. Hopefully Caleb Williams takes a step in year two. That's year two in the system. Yeah. That has to happen for all these guys, right? To be
really sure.
Good. He does have to get better. There's no question about that, even though he's really high, high promising notes. And if you were to like, you know, give me truth serum, I'd say I'm more positive than negative on Caleb. A lot of things have to happen. These guys have to stay healthy. They have to take the next step in their development. Like there are parts of Odunze's game that he needs to get better in isolation. There's no question about that.
Oh yeah.
Gotta make some plays to catch point. Gotta be a little bit better against zone coverage. But for the most part, like I think if these guys stay healthy, they take the next step of their development, both of them will be good. You can recuse yourself from the culture wars of you can only like one receiver on a team. Don't have to do that. You can opt out.
I'm gonna opt out. I am. I'm gonna take a step back. I'm going to reevaluate my values and see where we're at.
And look, like if Luther Burden came, bottom line is, if he came in here and was worse in reception perception, 100%, I'd be like, well, yeah, Odunze's better. But like, I mean, this stuff's obviously nuanced. It should be nuanced. It's complicated. I love to make it complicated because I love and respect football and I love and respect players. And like, you make it complicated to show your respect and not just make it this simple, whatever. You just want to make this stuff real simple from a reception perception standpoint. Really talented players, which Luther Burden's obviously really talented, who was a solid prospect. He was a solid prospect. Tier three receiver for me was a solid prospect. At minimum, solid prospect. Mm-hmm. Lands playing in a good offense.
Yeah.
Bears, whatever you think of Caleb Williams and all that, it's good offense. By any measure, last year was a really good offense. And this talented player clears 70% success rate versus man and 80% against zone. You bet on that player like every time. More often than not. But you bet on him more often than not. Maybe 8 out of 10 times, 7 out of 10. You bet on him way more often than not. If his profile was worse, sure, we could do the this, that, and the other. But like, yeah, he's a good player worth betting on. I think all these guys are good players worth betting on. So my answer, my Matt Harmon approves this statement. Okay. Address on these Bears pass catchers is yes. Which one do you like? Yes.
Yes. Like, that's it. Perfect. All right, there you go. Again, 10 profiles on the site right now, receptionperception.com. Go check it out. Oh my goodness. It's like a May Christmas right now, man. It's unbelievable content on the website. You're going to be finding running back profiles on there, tight end profiles on there, quarterback profiles on there as well. receptionperception.com. Go and check it out. All right, we got to get out of here. For Matt Harmon, I'm James Coe. We'll see you, but remember, it's never too late to chase your dreams. Peace.
I'm Dr. Hrini Bhatt, host of Hidden History. Every Monday, I go where history gets uncomfortable. Banner civilizations, doomsday prophecies, and events that science still can't fully explain. Listen to and follow Hidden History, available now wherever you get your podcasts.